You know, we just had the Yom Tov of Shavuos, and it's very interesting that we know that the day after a Yom Tov, this year it was Shabbos, but normally the day after a Yom Tov has a special status, and it is called Isru Chag. And Isru Chag literally means tying to the Chag. It is based on the Pasuk in Mishlei. The Pasuk in Hallel, the end of Hallel, the end of Tehillim, where it says, Kel Hashem v'yoyer lanu, the Almighty is our God, and He gives us light. Isru Chag b'Avosim ad Karnos HaMizbeach. Now, literally, what that means is, tie the Chag. Chag means the Korban. Tie your Chag to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, b'Avosim, with ropes, ad Karnos HaMizbeach, so you can bring the animal to the Mizbeach. So literally, the reference to Chag in the Pasuk in Hallel is referring to the Korban Chagiga, the special Korbanos that you would bring on Yom Tov. But Chazal used the phrase in a non-literal way, more of a metaphorical way, and they say Isru Chag means you tie the Yom Tov to the Chol by celebrating the afterglow of a Yom Tov in the Isru Chag. Now again, this year, at least in Eretz Yisrael, this year Isru Chag was Shabbos, so we obviously went from a lower Kedusha to a higher Kedusha. In Chutz La'aretz, Shabbos was the second day of Shavuos, that's why the Parshios are not in alignment, and Isru Chag was Sunday. Now, what is special about Isru Chag? So what is special about Isru Chag is that, among other things, you don't say Tachana. So there's an interesting Ha'ara from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Shulchan Aruch HaRav is the Shulchan Aruch written not by Rav Yosef Karo, but a later Shulchan Aruch, a revision of the Shulchan Aruch, that was written by none other than the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liade, who is known as the Rav, or the Baal HaTanya, or the Alter Rebbe, whatever name you want to give him. And if that sounds a little audacious, that somebody would write a new Shulchan Aruch, one needs to understand that the Shulchan Aruch HaRav is a very, very, very accepted work in Halacha. It is quoted and utilized by all the poskim, whether it's Hasidic or Misnaged. The Mishneh Berurah quotes the Shulchan Aruch HaRav many, 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 many times. It is considered to be an absolutely authoritative source of halakha. Although, if you're not Chabad, we often may not paskin like him, but his opinion is always consulted and is always taken into account. Just as a little aside, what is exceptionally unique about the Shulchan Aruch HaRav is not so much the psak that he gives, but we often do not follow that. But what is exceptional is he explains the background of every halacha. So if you really want to understand what halacha is about, if you want to understand the concepts of halacha, Shulchan Aruch HaRav is actually one of the best svarim to look at. So it's underutilized. A lot of people aren't even aware of it, or they don't use it. But it's a tremendously wonderful explanation of halachic yisodos. And the Shulchan Aruch HaRav says that Isru Chag of Shavuos has a greater halachic status than the Isru Chag of every other Yom Tov. That is, the Isru Chag of Pesach, the Isru Chag of Sukkot, the fact that we don't say Tachanun, that is only Mitam Minhag. Of course, the Isru Chag of Pesach, we don't say Tachanun for all of the month of Nisan. And the Isru Chag of Sukkot as well, in Eretz Yisrael, many have the minhag that they do not say Tachanun the rest of the month of Tishrei. But all of that is a minhag. And in fact, even on the Isru Chag itself, not saying Tachanun is only mitam minhag, but the Isru Chag of Shavuos has a status where al pi din, it has a certain aspect of Yom Tov, and you don't say Tachanun. What is so unique about the Isru Chag of Shavuos? So says the Baal HaTanya because it goes by its own name, and its name is Yom Tavoach, the Day of Slaughter. What is that? All of us know that on Yomim Tovim, there are certain obligations a Jew has. At least a male has to be Ola Regel. You have to come to Yerushalayim, and you have to physically present yourself in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. That's called Ola Regel. Not just go to the Old City or go to the Kotel. When there's a Beis HaMikdash, you physically had to enter the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. That's called the Azara. And when you enter the Azara, you are obligated to bring a korban ola, a burnt offering, because the Torah says, Lo yero panai rekam, do not see my face empty-handed. And that korban burnt offering is called an olas re'ia, an ola for the pilgrimage of coming to see Hashem and be seen by Hashem. Now, let's take any Yom Tov. How much time do you have to bring an olas re'ia? So the Gemara says that for Pesach, you have all 7 days, except on Shabbos. You can't bring it on Shabbos. So if I didn't bring my olas re'ia the first day of Pesach, I can bring it the second, third, fourth, five, six, seven, except on the day of Shabbos. The olas re'ia could be brought any day of the Yom Tov. Yom Tov or Chol HaMoed. Sukkos, we have an extra chiddush that you actually can even bring it on Shemini Atzeres, which is a little strange, because Shemini Atzeres mitzad itself is not mechayev in Olas Re'ia. You don't bring a separate Olas Re'ia for Shemini Atzeres. You bring a single Olas Re'ia for the holiday of Sukkos. And even though Shemini Atzeres is a separate Yom Tov, right? You have your own Shechiyano. You don't take Lulav and Esrog. You don't sit in the Sukkah. But with respect to being able to bring the Olas Re'ia, you can treat Shemini Atzeres as part of Sukkah. So if you didn't bring it the first 7 days, you can bring your Olas Re'ia on Shemini Atzeres. So Pesach, you have 7 days. Shemini Atzeres, I'm sorry, Sukkos, you have 8 days. How many days do you have for the holiday of Shavuos? Well, if we were to simply use our own logic, we would have said you only have 1 day, because you can only bring it during the Yom Tov. Shavuos is a 1 day Yom Tov, that's it. But the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that because there's a juxtaposition where all the Shalosh Regalim are compared to each other, so we have a drasha, just as Pesach has 7 days, we give you 7 days for Shavuos as well, meaning Shavuos plus another 6 days, except for Shabbos. And then the Gemara asks the obvious question, well, wait a second, why do you compare Shavuos to Pesach and only give you 7 days? Compare Shavuos to Sukkos and give you 8 days. How do you know which regal to compare it to? And the Gemara lays down the famous rule, tafasta meruba lo tafasta, which means when you try to grab too much, you get nothing, meaning the following. I know for sure you have 7 days, because if I compare it to Pesach, you have seven. And if I compare it to Sukkos, you'll have eight. So seven is guaranteed. Eight is unknown. So we go with what we are certain of, as opposed to what we would be uncertain. And therefore, bottom line is, Shavuos has seven. So it turns out that the Olas Re'ia, which you only bring one, don't misunderstand me. You don't bring seven, you bring one. But you have 7 days, except for Shabbos, to bring it on Pesach. You have 7 days to bring it on Shavuos. And you have 8 days to bring it on Sukkos, because you have Shemini Atzeres. And the only limitation is that you cannot bring an Olas Re'ia on Shabbos. But now, let me mention the following machlokas, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai has a major limitation on what I just said that would almost be mevatel everything I just said. It is Beis Shammai's opinion that an olas re'iyah cannot be brought on Yom Tov at all. It can only be brought on Chol HaMoed. And what is Beis Shammai's svara? Because Beis Shammai says the following. You're allowed to do malacha on Yom Tov for food preparation. That's called ochel nefesh. We're allowed to cook. And not only for food preparation, we expand it to include anything that's a Yom Tov need. I could carry my keys, even if there's no Erev, etc. But Beis Shammai says, the heter of malacha on Yom Tov is only for ochel nefesh, for something I'm going to eat. So bishlama, a korban shlamim, where you shecht and you cook the meat and some of it you're going to be eaten. A korban shlamim can be brought on Yom Tov. But Beit Shammai says, you cannot bring a korban ola on Yom Tov because a korban ola is totally burnt and consumed on the Mizbeach. And if the korban ola is totally consumed on the Mizbeach, it is not ochel nefesh. And the Torah says, hu levado yayaseh lachem. You can do malacha on Yom Tov for you, and for you excludes a lot of things. It excludes animals. You cannot cook food for your animal. It excludes non-Jews. You're not allowed to cook food on Yom Tov for a non-Jew. In fact, Derech Agav, this may raise halakhic problems sometimes. The halakha is absolutely clear. There's an Isser D'Oraisa to cook food on Yom Tov for a non-Jew. That's the D'Oraisa. Chazal made a gezera that you're not even allowed to invite a non-Jew to a Yom Tov meal. Now, that's not D'Oraisa. But the reason why, because they were afraid if you invite him, you might do some special cooking for him. And therefore, they assured invitations, lest you come to be Mavasha. This, by the way, raises enormous problems in our modern society. Litzareinu HaGadol, many, many people, even religious families, unfortunately may have intermarriages in their family. So let's say, Rachmana Litzlan, a person has a son who is married to a non-Jew. And you want to invite, the parent wants to invite his son for a Seder or for a Yom Tov meal, but the son is not going to go without his non-Jewish partner. Now, there is a general problem. To what degree do you even allow that? That's an interesting shaila. I mean, are you endorsing it? Are you validating it? One needs to talk to a Rav about those issues. But assuming that in order to keep the bond with your son, you're going to allow the non-Jew to come in and you'll try to even to be friendly and be makarev. And again, that's a very important issue that has to be discussed, a very important issue that I'm glossing over. There is a technical halachic issue. How can I have them over for Yom Tov? Chazal prohibited having a goy as a guest. Now, interestingly enough, on Shabbos, you're allowed to have the guy as a guest. Because on Shabbos, there is no fear you will cook for the guy because you're not allowed to cook for the Jew. This is interesting. So on Shabbos, you know, you may not like the Shabbos Ruach, whatever it is, but on Shabbos, there is no problem, technically, in having a guy as a guest, as long as you're careful about the wine, that the wine should be a Yayin Mabushal and the like. But on Yom Tov, where you're allowed to cook, Chazal did prohibit inviting the non-Jew. So what do you do in the case of the intermarriage? So Lemaisa, without getting into all of the technicalities, the poskim are very, very makel on this because they basically say, number one, you're only inviting the non-Jew because the non-Jew is attached to the Jew. So we're not afraid you'll do special cooking for them because you're not really inviting them in their own individual capacity. Second of all, some poskim say, if all of your food has been pre-cooked and you're doing no cooking at all on Yom Kippur, then we're not afraid you'll cook for the goy. When are we afraid you'll cook for the goy? If you're doing fresh cooking for that meal. But if you're not doing fresh cooking for that meal, so b'meila, we're going to matur. So one needs to be aware of this. Of course, some people say, well, okay, even if you assume you're allowed to invite the goy to the Yom Tov meal, but is there a special problem with the Seder? Meaning, is the Seder in a different category than even a regular Yom Tov meal? So some people say yes, because the Seder is modeled on the Korban Pesach. And for the Korban Pesach, the Torah itself emphasizes, Kol ben nechar, lo yochal bo, a non-Jew is not allowed to partake in the Korban Pesach. So some suggest that even when you have a heter to invite a goy to a regular Seudat Chag, there may be a special problem with inviting a goy to a Pesach Seder. But Lamaisa, we do not paskin that way. We paskin that a Pesach Seder is like any other Yom Tov meal. And if there is a heter to invite the non-Jew to a regular Yom Tov meal, then that heter would even extend to the Seder itself. Meaning we don't treat the Seder in a different category, although Bizman HaMikdash we obviously would, because of the Isser of giving a non-Jew the Korban Pesach. You may recall the Gemara has a story. I mean, it's kind of a cute story, but you know, it ended in a tragic way, at least for the person who was killed, that there was a non-Jew that was boasting that every year he's boasting to Rav Yehuda in Babel, that every year he comes to Yerushalayim and he gets to eat the Korban Pesach. He passes himself off as a Jew and he gets invited to join a Korban Pesach and eats the Korban Pesach. Now, Rav Yehuda was very old and sick and was not able to go to Eretz Yisrael, but he was very upset that this person was causing this great sin of the Korban Pesach being consumed by a non-Jew. So he told the non-Jew, have you ever eaten from the fat tail of the lamb, the most delicious part of the lamb? And the person said, no, I haven't. So we told him, next time you go for Pesach and you're part of a chabur to eat the Korban Pesach, be sure to ask for the alya, the fat tail. So the guy takes that bit of information, and when Pesach comes around and he passes himself off as a Jew, and they're giving out the portions of the Korban Pesach, he says, I want the tail. Now, for those who don't know, the problem is the tail is actually one of the portions of the animal that you bring on the Mizbeach. It's not eaten. So they looked at him and said, the tail? You want the tail? Who told you to ask for the tail? So he said, a great rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda, said I should ask for the tail. So they understood that Rabbi Yehuda was intimating, hinting to them by having the guy ask for the tail, that the goy was not eligible to eat the Korban Pesach. And they were bodek, they investigated his lineage, and they saw that he was a non-Jew. And it is recorded they actually killed him. They killed him. Now, interesting halachic question, on what grounds can you kill him? Now granted, a non-Jew eating the Korban Pesach is a sin, but it does not seem to be a capital offense. Why would he be chayav misa? So the Mefarshim give different opinions. One opinion is that if he's not allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach, his eating the Korban Pesach is an act of theft. And that's a violation of the Noahide laws. And the violation of theft, indeed, is a chi of Misa under Dinei B'nei Noach. Okay. By the way, this issue of inviting a goy for Yom Tov is not only, God forbid, in the case of an intermarriage, but maybe even a more common situation, is you have candidates for conversion. Can I invite a guy who has not yet finished his conversion for a Yom Tov meal or a Pesach Seder? Because if you're going to tell me I can't, then in a way it's going to be very difficult for him to experience the Jewish rituals if you can't invite him for a yomtiv. So because of this, we're noita for various heterim. Okay. But be it as it may, this was all a digression. So on yomtiv, you can only cook for yourself, for another Jew. You cannot cook for goyim. You cannot cook for animals. And according to Beit Shammai, you can't even shecht and burn meat for God. Lachem v'lo ligavoa. Which means, according to Beit Shammai, an olas re'ia can never be brought on Yom Tov. Not just Shabbos, but on Yom Tov. So in the case of Pesach, you would have to wait until Chol HaMoed. In the case of Sukkot, you would have to wait till Chol HaMoed, and you wouldn't have Shmini Atzeres, by the way, by definition, because that's a Yom Tov. And in the case of Shavuos, the earliest you could bring the Korban Chagiga would be Isru Chag, the earliest. Meaning you have 7 days, or you know, you have all the days after the first day of Yom Kippur, you have 6 days other than Shabbos. But according to Beit Shammai, the first earliest point that you could bring the Korban Chagiga of Shavuos was Isru Chag. Now, you may ask a question, well, wait a second. So Beit Shammai is saying you cannot bring a Korban Ola on Yom Tov because since it totally goes to Hashem, it is not within the heter of Ochel Nefesh. But wait a second. There are plenty of Korbanos that you bring in the Beis HaMikdash, not only on Yom Tov, but even on Shabbos. Consider the Korban Tamid that is brought in the morning and in the afternoon. What is the Korban Tamid? It is an Ola. And it's brought on Shabbos even. The Musafim for the Yomim Tovim, for Rosh Chodesh and the Yomim Tovim and for Shabbos are Korban Olas. So what does Beis Shammai saying that you can't bring a Korban Ola on Yom Tov? So here, let me point out the following. This is obvious, but people might not fully grasp this. The Korban Tamid and the Korban Musaf are a totally different category. Those are communal offerings that are brought on behalf of the Jewish people. And it's a Dover Pashut that the communal offerings that are brought on behalf of the Jewish people, the Korban Tamid, the Korban Musaf, they are brought whenever they have to be brought. They are brought on Shabbos, they are brought on Yom Kippur, they are brought on Yom Tov. That has nothing to do with the machlokas, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. So we're not talking about the Korban Tamid, and we're not talking about the Korban Musaf. Even if they're burnt offerings, we shecht and we burn and we do many, many malachas. If you walked into the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos, you would think that you're walking into a place of Chilul Shabbos because they're doing all sorts of prohibited malachas. But an Olas Re'ia, you understand, is not a Korban Sibur. It is not a communal offering on behalf of Am Yisrael. An Olas Re'ia is a private Korban. Now, private Korbanos cannot be brought on Shabbos at all. That's why I said the Olas Re'ia is never brought on Shabbos. On Yom Tov, this gets us into the machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beis Shammai says only shulamim are permitted, because since you're going to eat some of the meat, that is called ochel nefesh, and not ola. That's Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel says we even permit ola, because the exclusionary term of lachem for you excludes goyim and animals, but it does not exclude what you do for Hashem. So this is a huge machlokas about Olos Re'iyah. According to Beit Shammai, Olos Re'iyah cannot be brought on Yom Tov, only Chol HaMoed. According to Beis Hillel, Olos Re'iyah can be brought even on Yom Tov. Now, Says the Bava Tanya, the significance of Isru Chag Shavuos was it was the first time that people were able to bring the Olas Riyah of Shavuos, the first time. And therefore, even though they had more days afterwards, most people tried to bring their Olas Riyah on Isru Chag of Shavuos. Because of that, it acquired the name Yom Tavoach, the Day of Slaughter. And that is why the Isru Chag of Shavuot is so important. The Isru Chag of Pesach, Fakeret, by the time you have Isru Chag of Pesach, you can no longer bring the Olas Riyah. It's after Pesach. The Isru Chag of Sukkot Shemini Atzeres is also too late. But the Isru Chag of Shavuot has the Malyusa, the great advantage, that it is Yom Tavoach, and that is why the Bava Tanya writes that the Isru Chag of Shavuos is the most important Isru Chag of all, because that was the day that most people brought their Olas Re'iyah. Now, the Bava Tanya asks on himself, wait a second, that's only true according to Beit Shammai. Like Beit Shammai, you cannot bring the Olas Riyah on the Yom Tov of Shavuos. So therefore, the earliest time you could bring it is the day after Shavuos, which was Isru Chag. So that got the chashivas of Yom Tavoach. But according to Beis Hillel, Isru Chag is not the earliest time you could bring the Korban Olas Riyah. You could bring the Olas Riyah on Shavuos itself. Because Beis Hillel says you can bring it on Yom Tov. If that's the case, Isru Chag should be no better than the day after that, the day after that, and the day after that. It's just another day that if you didn't bring it the first day, you can bring it the next day. What is the chashivas of Isru Chag according to Beis Hillel? Now, obviously, as all of you know, when you have a machlokas, Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai, we paskin like Beis Hillel. So we paskin you bring an Olas Riyah on Yom Tov. So what is the malyusa? What is the advantage? What is the significance of Isru Chag Shavuos that we should give it a special title called Yom Tavoach, the Day of the Slaughtering? The Alter Rebbe asks the Kasha. And the Alter Rebbe says the following idea. Even though it is true that the halacha is like Beis Hillel, that you could bring the Olas Riyah on Yom Tov, Nagu Ha'am, the people had a minhag. The minhag of Klal Yisrael was to follow Beit Shammai, and they would bring it Chol HaMoed. And therefore it became Yom Tavoach, not because it had to be Yom Tavoach, but it became Yom Tavoach because that became the minhag of Am Yisrael, to follow Beit Shammai. Now the Alter Rebbe does not explain why did that become the minhag, to follow Beit Shammai. In fact, elsewhere, that following Beit Shammai is actually not even proper. In the beginning of Maseches Brachos, there's a machlokes, Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, how you fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. Right, the Torah says the mitzvah of Kriya Shema is b'shachbacha u'b'kumecha, when you lie down and when you get up. Beis Shammai interprets that directive in a very literal way. When you say the Shema of Arvit, you lie down and you say it. When you say the Shema of the morning, you stand up. B'shachbacha u'b'kumecha, when you lie down and when you stand up. That's Beit Shammai. Beis Hillel says that the Torah is not referring to what position you should be in. Rather, the Torah means it's referring to a time. The Shema of the evening is when it starts, when people begin to go to sleep, b'shachbacha, and the Shema of the morning is when people get up. In other words, it is not referring to physically how you're positioned. It's referring to zamanim, morning and night. The Mishnah then says, Rabbi Tarfon, one of the great Tanoim, wanted to be machmir. He says, I was traveling at night, and I wanted to be machmir, to follow Beit Shammai's view. And I said the Shema of the evening when I was lying down. And because I was vulnerable, I was lying down, I almost lost my life because I was attacked by robbers. So he was saying, I was Meiser Nefesh to follow Beit Shammai, and I was in Sakana. So the rabbis gave him tough love. They didn't give him that much sympathy. And they said, you were Chayav Misa, you deserve to die, because you're not following the halacha like Beis Hillel. You're trying to, I see a question. Wasn't the first machlokas by doing Smicha on Yom Tov? That is true. The machlokas we're talking about is a later machlokas. But that's a machlokas about Smicha of a Korban Shlomim. The initial machlokas of Smicha is a Korban Shlomim with Beit Shammai allows you to bring. But Beit Shammai took the position a Korban Ola cannot be brought at all, and therefore the issue of Smicha would not be relevant. So there are actually two different machlokas, and one is Smicha on a Korban Shlomim, and the other is, can you bring a Korban Ola at all? So the Gemara says that Rabbi Tarfon was Chai of Misa because he transgresses Beis Hillel's halacha. And yet the Baal HaTanya tells me, when it comes to the Olas Re'iya, the minhag of Klal Yisrael was to forego bringing the Olas Re'iya until Isruchag Yom Tavoach to follow the view of Beis Shammai. Why? Why would that be so? And why would it even be proper? So there actually is a beautiful, beautiful Hesber from the great, great, great grandson of the Alter Rebbe, none other than the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Menachem Mendel Schneerson. And he says the following, and this is going to overlap a little bit with my Sunday shiur, so please accept my apologies for those that heard me on Sunday. That is, all of us know that there's a widespread minhag that people stay up all night the first night of Shavuos. And although that minhag is fairly recent, it really dates from Rav Yosef Karo, the 1500s. And there's an interesting academic study that shows that the spread of the minhag actually correlated with the introduction of coffee in Europe, meaning to say, as coffee got to different European countries, so people develop the capacity to stay up all night, and the minhag of staying up all night spread. So in countries that didn't have coffee, the minhag was not nikvah. In countries that had coffee, the minhag was established. But although the minhag itself is not ancient, it is based on a medrash. And the medrash actually says that the night before Matan Torah, the Jewish people went to sleep, and they overslept. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu came at the crack of dawn to give them the Torah, he found a nation that was slumbering. And therefore, in order to rectify the chait of the generation of Jews that slept at the time of Matan Torah, we stay up all night, so to speak, so we're there to greet God when God comes in the morning. And therefore the minhag of staying up all night is said to be a tikkun, a rectification, for the chait of the Jewish people sleeping through Matan Torah. So the question becomes, how could they sleep? They have the biggest event of their lives coming. Most of us wouldn't be able to sleep at all, and we certainly wouldn't sleep late. So the Rebbe was Masber that their sleeping was L'shem Shemayim. They had prepared themselves for holiness, and their yearning and desire to be close to God is so great and so intense that they feel that they need to get their soul out of their body. Their body is going to hold them down. Their body is going to imprison them. The soul, the neshama, when it is freed from the guf, is capable of achieving so many revelations, so many prophecy, prophetic experiences that connected with God. That's why great tzaddikim often perceive the deepest secrets of the Kabbalah V'dafka when they're asleep, because their neshama then soars out of the body to the highest realms of heaven. So their kavana in sleeping was not out of laziness, it was not out of exhaustion, it was certainly not out of indifference, but it was a desire for a devekus that would not be subject to the limitations of the body. Their sleep was a holy sleep. Their sleep was a sleep of devekus with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what's the aveira? What's the chisaron? What's the pagam? Sounds good. The pagam is that even though their kavana was good and their kavana was noble, it is God's will that we sanctify not only our neshamas, but we sanctify our bodies. Because the essence of Torah is to teach us that there is no dichotomy, there is no contradiction between body and soul. It's not that soul is holy and body is profane. Rather, the Torah gives us a mechanism where even our eating and drinking and sexual intercourse and working, even those activities that we may have in common with animals, can be elevated, consecrated, sanctified. Yes, an animal eats and I eat. But when I eat, I can have a thought. I'm eating to have strength and nourishment to be able to serve Hashem. I go to work to make a kiddush Hashem and to earn money to give tzedakah and support my family with dignity. Meaning, avodas Hashem is not only in your davening and in your learning and in your so-called spiritual activities, but the Torah teaches me that avodas Hashem can be precisely when I grapple with the physical and the material and the gashmias of Olam Hazeh. And indeed, that is God's very desire, as the Baal HaTanya writes in the name of Chazal. It was God's desire to make what is called a dira b'tachtanim. And if you're a Chabad, you've heard this expression millions of times probably. Dira b'tachtanim means a dwelling place in this lowly world. That is God's desire. And therefore, they're making a big mistake, because when they think they serve God only when they disengage from their body, i.e. go to sleep, they're positing a contradiction between body and spirit, when in fact the Torah is about integrating the body and the spirit. And this is a unique gift of Torah, because with respect, without a Torah, if you want to become close to God, you have to disengage. That is why non-Jewish religions may have celibacy. They may have poverty, because their idea of holiness is renunciation. Our idea of holiness is synthesis and integration. And that is the whole essence of Matan Torah. The Maral explains, the Rebbe doesn't bring the Maral, but I'll bring it. By the way, the Maral himself was the great-grandfather of the Alter Rebbe. So although the Maral was before the Baal Shem Tov, the Maral is an honorary chassid. The Maral is considered to be kind of a precursor to chassidus. The Maral explains that this is the meaning of a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, where a certain man from Galil said, Berich Rachamana, blessed is God who gave a threefold Torah, Torah, Nevi'im, Kesuvim, to a threefold nation, Kohanim, Levi'im, Yisra'elim, in the third month, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, after 3 days of preparation. Now, the Gemara does not say what the significance of that is. It simply makes the observation that just as there are many parts of Pesach that are connected to four cups of wine, four sons, four Lashonas of redemption, four questions, right? Pesach is very much connected to four. Matan Torah is connected to three. Okay. But what is the chashivas of being connected to three? So says the Maral, 3 is a very important symbolic number, because 3 geometrically is represented by a triangle. And if you imagine a triangle, look at the base of the triangle, where you have a line and the two points are at opposite ends of the line. So these are opposites. But when you draw lines from those two points and they meet at an apex, the two opposite points get synthesized and combined. And therefore, the Maharal says 3 is the synthesis of opposite and opposing forces to bring them together. And therefore, the number 3 always connotes a balance and a harmony and an integration and a synthesis of forces that would otherwise be contradictory or in opposition to each other. So the Maharal says, this is why the Torah is connected to the number 3. Because the human being is comprised of body and spirit, guf and neshama. And in many ways, the guf and neshama are in opposition to each other. The guf wants pleasure, laziness, hedonism, lack of involvement in spirituality. The neshama craves unity with God, spirituality, ruchnis. The guf and the neshama are in a constant fight, a constant struggle. And sometimes the guf will win, and sometimes the neshama will win. But they never coexist in harmony. The Torah comes along and is mechadesh, that there's a way that these opposite forces can be harnessed, can be synthesized, can be integrated, in which your eating and your drinking and your vacationing can all be done l'shem shamayim, to give you energy and strength to serve God, to be a vehicle for hakarat hatov, right? So you go to the Grand Canyon or whatever. So you're taking a vacation. If you just take a vacation, maybe it's a waste of time. Maybe it's bittul Torah. Maybe it's not thinking about God. But if I go to the Grand Canyon and I use it as a vehicle for Ma Rabo Masecha Hashem, how wonderful and wondrous and awe-inspiring is God's creation. When I drink water or look at flowers or listen to symphonies or art or eat a good meal and I use it as a vehicle of Hakaras HaTov, and to recharge my batteries for Avodas Hashem, then the eating and the drinking and the touristing and the visiting all become part of your Avodas Hashem. So the Maharal says that the Torah is connected to the number 3 because it integrates things that would otherwise be opposite. And that is why the Gemara says, there's a machlokas, there is one opinion in the Gemara, Rabbi Eliezer, that says, you don't have to eat on Yom Tov. You want to fast on Yom Tov and learn all day on Yom Tov? Rabbi Eliezer says you could. We don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. But that's Rabbi Eliezer's view. But on Shavuos, even Rabbi Eliezer says you have to have cheesecake. You have to eat. Because that's the day the Torah was given. Now that's a non sequitur. If Rabbi Eliezer allows me to learn all day when it's Pesach, then kal v'chomer, I should learn all day on Shavuos. And yet, the Gemara says the opposite. Shavuos is the day where you have to have the meal. Why? Because Torah is about integration. Torah is about saying that I don't consider the physical evil. The physical is neutral and can be recaptured and channeled and utilized for Avodas Hashem. This is why halachically, non-Jews are allowed to bring korbanos to the Beis HaMikdash. Non-Jews can bring sacrifices to the temple. But the only sacrifice they can bring is a burnt offering. They cannot bring peace offerings. Peace offerings, korban shlamim, can only be brought by Jews. A korban ola can be brought by a Jew and by a non-Jew. What's the difference? The difference is that without a Torah, there is holiness in the world. A non-Jew can be a holy person, but the holiness comes from disengagement with the world. A holy person is one who gets away from the world. That's an Ola. What is an Ola? You totally give it to God. But a Shlamim says, I'm eating, I'm drinking, I'm having a party, I'm having a celebration. That also becomes Avodas Hashem. That is unique to the Jew that has the Torah. And that's why Bnei Noach can bring Olos, and Bnei Noach cannot bring Shlamim. Shlamim is the Avodah of sanctifying the Gashmias. Ayla is the Avodah of repudiating the Gashmias. Repudiation of Gashmias, everybody has. Sanctifying the Gashmias is the unique koach of the Torah. You see? So now, Lubavitcher Rebbe says, Gevaldik. Again, a lot of this I've supplemented by adding some things. He says the following. If Shavuos is about sanctifying even the physical, you can understand why the Ola Korban would be de-emphasized. Yes, according to Beis Hillel, they could have brought the Olas Re'iyah on Yom Kippur. But the Ola is not the Korban that is most appropriate for Shavuos, because the Ola represents renunciation of the physical. The Shlamim represents sanctifying and elevating the physical. So when the Alter Rebbe says, Nagu Ha'am, that the minag of the people was to follow Beit Shammai, he doesn't mean, this is the Chiddush, he doesn't mean every Yom Tov they did this. On Pesach, they followed Beis Hillel, they brought it on Yom Tov. On Sukkot, they followed Beis Hillel. They brought the Olas Re'iyah on Yom Tov. But on Shavuos, the minag was, they followed the Shita of Beit Shammai because they de-emphasized the Ola, because the Ola represented the holiness of renunciation, and Matan Torah is the holiness of integration, harmonization, and balance. And that is why, even though Al Pidin, the Olas Re'iyah could certainly have been brought on the first day of Shavuos, because we paskin like Beis Hillel, but says the Baal HaTanya, Nagu Ha'am, the minhag of the people was like Beit Shammai. So this is the Hesber of Lubavitcher Rebbe. Again, a really, really gewaltige Hesber. Let me say, it is a very, very important issue. I had mentioned in my Sunday class that this is relevant not only to us as individuals, but it's also relevant even in a more political way. You know, there were people in the early Zionist movements who were Zionists, and this is not even a religious issue, but they were against the idea of Jewish statehood. They wanted Jews to come to Israel, and they wanted Jews to develop Israel as a cultural and religious center. But they felt that Jewish statehood was not the correct step. In fact, the most famous of them was Ahad Ha'am. Ahad Ha'am was a colleague of Herzl. Again, Ahad Ha'am was not particularly religious, although he did coin the famous phrase that more than the Jews have kept the Shabbos has kept the Jews. Of course, he was a Jew who didn't keep the Shabbos, so I guess he knew that idea very, very well. So I'm not dealing now with Neturei Karta, I'm not dealing with any of those issues, but I'm saying that there were those who were against statehood because they felt that if we get our hands dirty with the grubby details of political and social life, we will no longer be living in the pure, ethereal, spiritual plane of ideas. So Ahad Ha'am envisioned the idea, kind of a utopian ideal, that we should come to Israel and we should play music and read Plato and Aristotle every day. Not so much Torah, unfortunately, but you know, at least that secular vision. And we should leave to others the work of digging the ditches and planting the fields and negotiating and even fighting wars. Because if we have to get involved in all of those details, our spiritual values get corrupted. We become degraded. And we're no longer living at the high, elevated, ethereal plane of spiritual ideas. This was a secular position within the Zionist movement. Chaim Ha'am maintained it. Martin Buber, although he lived into the years of the state, felt the same way. Many, many intellectuals were very, very uncomfortable with the notion of Jewish statehood, although they were very supportive of Israel as a religious, cultural, and philosophical center. But I think that what the presentation today might show is that although it's true that when you grapple with the details of everyday life, whether it's running a country and whether it's, you know, running a family of a lot of kids that have to be taken to doctors and to playgroups and different types of things, in some ways you're not living the pure, holy life of reflection, meditation, contemplation. You're in the mud. But the whole goal of the Torah is to give us the koach, to bring holiness even into the mundane. And instead of looking at earthly matters as worthless and degrading, and we focus on holiness, Torah is about seeing God, even in the mud, seeing God in the changing of the diaper, seeing God in the building of a society, seeing God in maintaining an army, seeing God in building a society with sacrifices, with difficulty, with struggle, in building our families the same way. You know, listen, in many, many ways, the Gemara tells us there was a very great rabbi, Ben Azai, who didn't want to get married because he thought that would be a distraction from his connection to God. But that was a mistake, because God says you connect to me by your interaction with this world and you become my partner in bringing holiness out of the dark and bring the light of God into places where it otherwise would not shine. And this is kind of the ultimate message of Matan Torah. Be'ezrat Hashem, I hope that we will be able to integrate it. You know, sometimes this is a very, very frustrating, difficult situation. Corona has created a lot of isolation, and just when we think we're coming out of it, the schools begin to open, the shows begin to open. There are going to be setbacks, so it's two steps forward, one step back. Sometimes it's one step forward and two steps back. It's a very topsy-turvy world. As I've said many, many times, one of the things Hashem is showing us is how weak we are, how dependent we are. We think we've controlled our environment. We think we've mastered our environment with our technology, with our science, with our intellect. We think we're in control. And Hashem throws us a loop that shows how little we really control our fate. And that can be very, very disheartening. But at the same time, it can also give a person a sense of relief. Because if I'm not in charge, that means the Ribbono Shel Olam is in charge. And if he is in charge, he knows what we need. He knows how to take care of us. Be'ezrat Hashem, I hope we will all experience the love and the rachamim of Hashem, but then turn around to do our job to bring Hashem's greatness and light into this world. So you all have a good week, a Shavua Tov, and much, much hatzlacha. Stay healthy and be in good spirits. Kol Tov.